in business. Okay.
All right. It was, as I believe, before the decision was made in the lawsuit. That I began to mount this public relations campaign, and I remember that I put together a rather extensive book called Supreme Court versus Dorothy Riley, or The Matter of Dorothy Riley, or whatever it was called, and it was copies of all the litigation papers, et cetera, et cetera. One of the things that I accused the Attorney General of doing was deliberately hiding from the court the particular constitutional provision that I quoted that says the Supreme Court shall not remove a judge. This whole case went to and through the entire Supreme Court. The decision was made to take her off the court, and yet nobody in the court had ever argued that constitutional provision. It was never mentioned in the briefs or anything. And I pointed out that in the brief of the Attorney General, they had come right down to it. They had even dealt with the same section or the section right before it and come right down to that language that said the Supreme Court should not have the power to remove a judge, and they stopped quoting the statute or the Constitution. Almost as though they were deliberately trying to keep these words away from the Supreme Court, hoping they wouldn't find them in the Constitution. And apparently nobody did, because there isn't any evidence at all, no record whatsoever, in the oral arguments or the briefs or in the opinions of the court or anything, that anyone ever dealt with that language. I mean, had the Supreme Court said, yes, we know that the Constitution says Supreme Court should not have the power to remove a judge, but we don't think it applies in this case for this reason and that reason and that reason. At least they would have created a little film or veneer of judicial interpretation, but there was no effort to do that at all. And the only conclusion you could come to looking at this whole thing was that nobody saw that language, or if they did, they didn't want to talk about it. So, in any case, I went out to the law schools around. I went to the University of Michigan Law School, Wayne State. I went to the Detroit College of Law, and here at Cooley. And every place I went, we put up notices around that ex-Justice Brennan was going to be here. We're talking about the Dorothy Riley case, which was big news at that time. So we got good turnouts among the various students, and the press covered us. And it was like a teach-in. I was going around lecturing about the Constitution, what it said, how this whole thing had come to pass, what a travesty it was, and what should be done, hoping that I would generate some popular support for for Dorothy Riley and some public opinion that the court was making a mistake, to back them off. Whatever I did, I didn't do enough of it. I mean, it wasn't that successful. My sense was, as I went along, that the press basically treated the matter as Republicans versus Democrats, and all of my nice arguments about ignoring the Constitution and being faithful to oaths of office and all the rest of it was just rhetoric that all had to be understood in the context that I was a Republican and so was Dorothy Riley, and that the Democrats had won the election, and that this is what Kelly, the Democrat, and Blanchard, the Democrat, and Soapy Williams, and Mike Kavanaugh, and all the other Democrats on the court wanted to do. And you could talk till you're blue in the face that you couldn't persuade the newspapers that, in fact, there were higher principles at stake than just that the winner goes the spoils. So, nonetheless, after this attempt at revving up public opinion, I finally concluded that my only shot, my last hope, was to try to lay a guilt trip on the court and see if maybe the justices themselves would back off if they could appreciate the enormity of what they had done. And So I announced at a press conference that I was going to be in court at the opening of court in the March session. And in the meantime, I concocted an application for a writ, which has probably not been seen in the courts of this land in several centuries. But it was a legitimate writ from the old common law, called an application for a writ of quorum vobis. And quorum vobis, quorum vobis means our hearts. Whether it's quorum vobis or ad quorum vobis, I forget. I think it's quorum vobis. And it was a writ that was sort of used in the old days as a last resort. So you could call it the St. Jude writ, you know, the case of the hopeless case, the patron saint of the hopeless cases. But it was a writ that addressed itself to our hearts. That's what the word quorum means, heart, and vobis means us or our. So it was a writ that appeals to our hearts, and it was an attempt to get the court to review this matter down deep in their own guts and rethink it. And I filed it with the clerk, and I don't know, I paid a fee, or they didn't know what the kind of a fee you pay for such a writ. I think that the clerk just accepted the writ and made copies and delivered them to the justices. And so there I was, asking the court for this writ. And, of course, there was no procedure for me to appear or anything like that. No court rule that covered the situation. So I just went and sat in the courtroom as I had said publicly I would do, and somebody in the press asked me, "Can that machine hear me if I talk loud as I walk?"
Sure.